Today I want to talk about, to get what you want, how do you have to grow? Let's assume a few things before I get into this topic. To get what you want, how do you have to grow? The first thing is, if wanting what we want was easy, we would already have, and always have, exactly what we want. It is not easy. The second thing, wanting what we want is only one side of the coin. The other side of the coin seems to be not wanting what we don't want. The third point is this concept, I want what I want and I don't want what I don't want, is our common way to demonstrate what Christ refers to as bonding rejection in the Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth information. The fourth point is the reasons we don't have what we want are multiple, and that list probably can go on and on. It seems to me that one of those concepts is the other side of the coin, called counterintention or called rejection, is more powerful for us than bonding or our intention to have what we want. So if our rejection or intention to avoid what we don't want is stronger than our intention to have what we want, then we obviously are going to end up battling what we don't want. It seems to me, too, there's another point having to do with, it seems easy to have greater clarity about what we don't want, initially anyway. So if we are clear about what we don't want, it's possible that we stay stuck on that focus, and what happens then is we attract more of what we don't want. And I think that clarity about what we don't want is related to a survival instinct that is powered by the ego that says, if we know what we don't want and we know what we need to avoid, we know what we need to fight, then chances are we're going to survive another day. Without that natural tendency, we might not make it, and our bloodline may have disappeared onto the menu of some beastie thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. From an energy standpoint, I think we could say this is one of the reasons we don't have what we want, is we are not in vibrational alignment with what we say we want. I think if we were in vibrational alignment, we would occupy the same physical, mental, emotional space as the thing we want. But because there is this discrepancy vibrationally, there is a distance between us, either geographical or time or other ways as well. I think there's a tendency for us to be afraid of abandonment, not being loved, not being accepted, feeling insecure, not being certain about things. Is the ground we're standing on going to be there when we put our foot down, when we start to take the next step, as well as the loss of privacy that says, if I'm not private, if I'm not hidden, if I'm not closed off, other people are going to see me for who I am, and maybe that's going to open me up to criticism or emotional or physical attack. So maybe it's safer for me to hold myself back, to hide myself, as the saying goes, hide my light under a bushel. If the risks of the consequences, we consider some action, and the risks of that, then we look at the consequences, and if that stuff triggers memories of past pain due to our experiences, pretty easy in a lot of cases for that past pain memory to outweigh the hope of rewards or the joy or the profit or the good feelings that might come from achieving what we want. So again, pain might outweigh any kind of imagined hope or reward. I believe there are certain factors. Here are a couple of them. When we underestimate ourselves, you know, unhealthy beliefs, when we have listened to our past programming, what statements other people have made to us or we've made to ourselves, and we underestimate us and the available resources in relation to some goal that we want to achieve, it makes the goal more difficult to achieve because we are literally turning down our energetic power. We are energetically denying available resources to us, that is divine consciousness, that is awareness that arrives just in time to support us in our activities that we are trying to achieve. The other side of that is when we overestimate ourselves and the resources available to us in relation to some goal that we have set, that goal is more difficult to achieve. But it's more difficult in this case because of our blunders. We make mistakes. We take our eye off the ball. And when we don't pay attention to things, if we're not detail-oriented, if you will, we're not doing this step-by-step, we can see where that statement, pride comes before the fall, describes this problem, where we think we have totally everything under control. It's interesting to me to have read some years ago a research study where they were trying to determine the estimation capabilities of people with regard to a certain problem. So they did it with men and women, and they went back and forth, and they tried all kinds of controls and stuff. And they ultimately came to this conclusion. Women tend to underestimate themselves with relation to a goal or a problem and the ability to solve it. And men consistently overestimate their capabilities with regard to the solution of a problem. And you go, maybe it makes a great case for you're going to want to have male energy and female energy to kind of balance out things when you're approaching a problem. So I was listening to something the other day. Somebody was saying, It was Ernesto Ciroli who wrote the book Ripples from the Zambezi, talking about entrepreneurship. It was a YouTube video, and it was excellent. And that book is excellent. He said, no business, no successful business has ever, ever been started by one person. Never has happened. Everything takes two or more people to get something going. And when I think of that in regard to this overestimate, underestimate, this male and this female energy consideration, it's like, oh, this is cool. This is cool. Makes a lot of sense. I happened to be in New York. We were up here for the launching of the largest vessel manufactured in our hometown since World War II. It was manufactured by my brothers. It was named in honor of our younger brother and launched yesterday. And so the boatyard, because there was going to be a big party as a part of this launching, needed to be cleaned up. Well, that's within the capabilities of my wife, Marianne, and myself. So for a couple of days, we were cleaning up inside the boathouse. And it was interesting to see how effectively cooperate. I can do certain things very easily, very conveniently, with zero hesitation. And Marianne can do the same thing. But they tend to be different. So this male-female combination, this detail-organized structuring things really is a wonderful characteristic of Marianne, and moving stuff around and diving in, I'll say, electrically and cleaning up and moving big stuff and dealing with the musty, crummy, yucky stuff is much easier for me. And you just go, oh wow, this combination of energy is a way to get what we want. And all of us have this capability and this characteristic of having both male and female energy. So in certain situations, if female energy, nurturing, caring, organization, and a few other things are needed for that particular activity, we can draw that in. We already have it. This is true of men as well as women. But if something requires electricity, some idea, something to spark, some power, or maybe more brute force kind of energy to move something heavy, we also individually have access to that energy. All we have to do is take a moment, grow, and draw it in, and then get engaged in that activity. I think it's kind of cool. I think it's kind of cool to be able to do that. So I've talked about the overestimating and underestimating. One of the areas we're going to want to grow to is where we feel we and the resources available to us in relation to whatever goal we set, whether it's to start a business, buy a home, write a book, build a career, whatever, that we have the resources that can make us equal to achieving that goal. We can achieve that goal or better. And so when we become equal to whatever it is we want to achieve, it seems inevitable that there's going to be less resistance, less fear, less lower frequency energy involved in that. That is, we're going to be not so cavemanish, cavewomanish in our approach to this. We're going to use higher vibration. As some of you will know, we could label these three states of underestimation, overestimation, and equality as little circle, big circle, and equal circle, respectively. And if we can move ourselves, if we can grow to be equal to whatever we're faced with, and equality, in my opinion, really involves a high degree of respect. We're not trying to dominate, we're not trying to overwhelm, we're not trying to fight, we're not trying to run, but in fact, we respect whatever it is we have our attention to, and then we draw in the energy that helps us grow spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically to be able to achieve the goal that we have set for ourselves. Let's face it, when we talk about what we want and getting what we want, there is probably something standing in our way or something holding us back from getting what we want. Now, I'm not thinking any of these things are solid brick walls or iron bars or things of that sort. I believe they are mind creations. They are imagined by us. They are beliefs or memories that we empower by practicing them. We make our own difficulty. Here's a personal example. I sleep well. I fall asleep really quickly when I get into bed at night after I say the prayer from letter 8. I pat Nikki a couple of times to reassure her, as if she needs it. I don't know whether she does or not. It's reassuring to me. And I fall asleep. Typically, I wake up one time in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. I like to check the time so I can find out how much time I have yet to sleep so I can get back into bed and fall asleep, or whether I have to get up in a little while. So I do things differently. If I'm getting up in a little while, I start saying the prayer for letter 8. If I have time to sleep, I try to go back to sleep. But here's my problem. I tend to think about politics in the middle of the night. My mind sees politics and the Republican Party and other things political as threats, which I reject. And this rejection, this kind of thinking, is very disturbing of my peace. So this second phase of my sleep evening is way less peaceful, way less enjoyable, way less easy than the first part. So this is what I want. I want to be more peaceful when I think about politics. And I also want to be positively active in creating what I want, which is more democratic, and that's democratic government with a lowercase d. And the best hope I see for that is to have a more democratic uppercase D, government. And I definitely have to grow mentally and emotionally and probably spiritually too, in order to not feel the need to fight and reject and get lower vibrationally activated about these things. Most of us, and I certainly do, logically, I know, rejection solidifies energy pattern. Judgment solidifies energy patterns. It slows down the frequency of vibrations and makes them denser. Denser and heavier energies are more difficult to move. They're more sluggish. It's like taking something that's really light and converting it into something that weighs tons, and then it becomes really challenging to move. And when I think of politics, even though I know this, my ego, my caveman self, gravitates toward images that are violent impulses. Like, I would love to grow, and I need to grow to be able to handle that. It's not going to happen without my growth. The chances of changing the Republican Party? Not going to happen. Not going to happen. The change has to be within me. And I think with whatever goal we have, whatever peace or joy or happiness or success or health or fun or love we're seeking, really involves us growing. Even though rejection is resorted to constantly, I was going to say regularly, but it's constantly in human activity, most of us still know that ultimately rejection is going to fail. So if we know that rejection is going to fail, what do we do? And you can see this advertised too. The other common approach to getting what we want will usually fail as well, and that is work harder, struggle more, and then you will get it. Right? Years ago there was an ad, stockbrokers, right? Wall Street types, we do things the old-fashioned way. We work hard. It's like, okay, right. The idea of working physically, working harder to get what we want, seems, on the one hand, completely reasonable. If we perceive something we want with one or more of our five senses, I'm looking at a glass of water, why not use our physical body to get it? I'm reaching for the water, and I'm going to take a sip. What is not so obvious is that the we want it part is spiritual, mental, and emotional. It's not physical, right? I saw the glass with my eye, and the light came in, and I processed it, right? That's one of my five senses, sight. And I use touch to pick it up. But it was the mental creation that I wanted water. I processed that, I think water right now would be a good thing to sip. Even though we perceive that object, that thing, maybe with one of our, or more of our five senses, our five senses don't tell us that we want the object. They may locate it in time and space. Well, yep, here it is on the desk. Yep, I see it. Right over by the phone. Yep, I see that. It is our thoughts and feelings and the images plus emotions related to that, related to the glass, related to the water, that tells us we want that object. It is our thoughts and feelings, images plus emotions that dictate this. I want that. And then we use whatever means we think is most effective to achieve the acquisition of that. In self-improvement circles, for years now, there have been many different ideas that are promoted as the way to get what you want. If you want riches, if you want this, if you want that, if you want this, you do the following. And each one of them has a certain level of validity. Affirmations, subliminal recordings, images of desirable objects cut out of magazines, pasted onto cardboard and stuck onto a wall as a vision board. Those things are great. Those things are great because they give us images, they give us energy, they give us audio energy. All of them have value. And they're primarily designed to fan the flames of our desire. I want it more, I want it more, I want it more, I want it more. We're going to break through of any barriers that are in front of us. We're going to be able to break any chains of fear or doubt that are holding us back. That makes sense. It's almost as if they empower us to move toward and attain what we want. So if I were in a car and I wanted to go and I put pressure on the gas pedal, and I'd be watching the tachometer go vroom, as the engine is revving, it would be moving up to the red line. And then if I were able to break free, that is, put it into drive, put it into first gear, I would move forward. And, oh, yeah. Let's amp up our forward thrust. And that's the way to get what we want. That's what you need to grow. I don't think that is the most effective way to do it. There are a couple more aspects, one of which is the idea of bonding. Bonding with what we want is the other half of this bonding rejection set of impulses that Christ talks about in the letters. We naturally want to bond with what we want. And we naturally want to reject what we don't want or don't like. The trouble is, both bonding and rejection can be under the control of the ego as it expresses these four driving needs through the human personality, right? To defend ourselves from criticism, emotional or physical attack, to come in first in a race of life, to take all the best for ourselves without regard for others, and to keep our possessions, money, property, people, friends, family, without regard to other people. And it's like, oh, we're getting what we want. And while at first glance, maybe to a child, it sounds like we'll be happy if we get what we want all the time. And the trouble is, of course, our ego and the egos of other people would be in constant conflict. Oh, just like today in every country on this planet. If, as Christ says in Christ Returns, reveals startling truth, that the twin impulses of bonding rejection are the root of all human suffering, and the only way to attain the highest spiritual levels is to rise above the control of those two impulses. That leaves, in my opinion, allowing as the most effective way for us to get what we want. And now, allowing. What about the hard work? What about the struggle? What about taking it? What about fighting? And what about dog eat dog? And nope, not the solution. Allowing. If we can accept that the concept that our images used by the ego, you want this, you want that, you want this, you want that, right? Saturday morning advertising to cartoons that children probably has already started as a run-up to Christmas. Tell your mommy, tell your daddy you need to have this toy, this toy, this toy, that toy, that toy, this toy. It's like, mommy, I want this, I want this. And those impulses are triggered by advertising. And so, yeah. It is how the ego operates. Gotta have this, gotta have this, gotta have more than the other guy. That's how you know you're going to come in first to the race of life. You've got more than the other guy. And once you get it, you got to prevent the other guy from getting anything you have. You have to protect yourself. Yeah. And all the stuff you were convinced by somebody else through imagery and advertising that you wanted. We've got to get to the point to realize needs are different. Needs are a better way to see what we should be focusing on. Maybe I'm going to prepare a shopping list for life. Wait. That's going to lead me to problems of bonding, rejection. Let me look at the needs. And that's a much shorter list. Not so subject to advertising, of course. Not so subject to comparing myself to the Joneses. I don't have to keep up with anybody if I stay focused on needs. And if I would do a little bit of thinking about it, it was like, oh yeah, this is important. And our lives would be so much simpler because they wouldn't be cluttered with all the stuff that we've been convinced of and convince ourselves that we must have in order to survive. Then, if we have a list of needs and we focus on that, it follows that we could grow more trusting of divine consciousness, the same divine consciousness that Christ became aware of in the desert after he was baptized by John. He was like, wow, I'm totally, totally thrilled at this idea. I thought there was a big... Well, he didn't, because he rejected this idea from the very get-go, that there's some big guy up on a cloud that punishes some and favors others and is really fickle and unpredictable and sends plagues and punishment and demands incredible levels of obedience. Innocent things need to be killed in order to placate him. He said, that does not make any sense at all. So when he discovered that was a myth, he was so much more convinced of his own rightness beforehand. There's an ego thing. But it's like, wow, I'm glad I didn't buy into that big man on a cloud routine. But he saw that divine consciousness is providing for our needs. Right? Growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need. I was looking for fulfillment of want, never found it in the book. Fulfillment of need, work, survival, delivered in a rhythmic patterns, all being governed by the law of cause and effect. That is, we reap what we sow. So, there we have it. There we have it. Explanation of the needs, explanation of how they're going to be fulfilled rhythmically, and showing us how to produce them by sowing seeds, because we're going to reap what we sow. So sowing seems like a good idea. If we're a little bit more careful about that, more aware of that, more loving about that, more understanding about that, more balanced of our self-interest with other people's self-interest, getting to the point, to some point, that we act in brotherly love to all living beings, maybe we can then ascend to this concept of unconditional love. It's like, wow. If we can grow to understand and allow divine consciousness to provide for us, we can have what we want. Because we will shift what we want to our needs, and not all the trinkets that are advertised, not all the silly things that a consumer society is built upon producing and throwing into the landfills. We have always been provided for, and we continue to be provided for. If we can grow our understanding of divine consciousness and grow our experiences and notice the evidence of it, and grow our trust in divine consciousness, we can rise above the human dramas that plague this bonding, rejection-built life. And it would seem that to grow in this way, all we need to do is constantly reach out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and ask for enlightenment. And enlightenment to me really is a more understanding than I was a moment ago, insight into the answer of a question or a solution to a problem, not necessarily a guru type, enlightenment, but in fact to be less cloudy in our thinking than we were moments before. Seems to me that final sentence in the prayer from letter 8 is an indication of our willingness to rely on the source of all love, the source of all happiness, the source of all health, the source of all success, to provide for us. That line says, I commit myself and my life into your care. If we can grow and actually do that, we can have all of our needs met, and that's what we want. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of that prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.